It's weekends on All Things Considered. From NPR News, Guy Raz is away. I'm Cheryl Corley. About a week ago, I met a young man on Chicago's west side, right outside the two-story brick apartment building where he lives.
My name is Elias Roman. I'm 17, and we're on Little Village, 23rd and Washington.
Little Village is home to a large Mexican-American community. We walk about a block to an alley where the gang graffiti on garbage cans looks like the tattoos on Elias's arms. A faint sound of music from a Spanish-speaking radio station wafts in the air. Elias was born and raised here.
Yeah, these streets right here, all my life. Got memories, can't never forget.
You also got in trouble here.
Oh yeah, this right here is where I caught my first gun case.
But not his last. Nationally, there are about 71,000 juveniles locked up in residential facilities. In Illinois, it's about 1,000 kids, with another 1,600 on parole. Some have committed serious offenses, but many were involved in crimes like burglary or drug sales. State officials say research shows kids like that would be better served in treatment or educational programs. Our cover story today, the push to make sure kids who've committed a crime once don't end up in a juvenile facility again. Two years ago, Elias was 15 years old, a gangbanger, and like a lot of kids he ran with at the time, he had a gun. Out late one night, the cops picked him up. He was charged with gun possession.
So what happened to you then? After they caught you, you got sentenced, or what exactly?
They took me to a detention center for a month, and they put me on EM.
What is EM?
A house arrest. Put me on house arrest, I cut that off, and I was on the run for like 2-3 months, and then until they ended up catching me back over here.
Elias cut off the electronic monitor the Department of Juvenile Justice had placed around his ankle to keep up with him. 4 months later, he was picked up again, charged with unlawful use of a weapon, this time a lot longer stint in the state's juvenile centers.
Did you ever see your parole officer the first time around?
No, the first time around for my first gun case?
Mm-hmm.
No, I didn't. I hardly didn't even talk to him.
The second time was different. The state assigned a mentor to work with Elias and his family, part of the effort in Illinois to reduce the recidivism rate of juvenile offenders. And when he was released, says Elias, he had an entirely different mindset.
I was out here and I have nothing doing for myself. That's how I ended up in bars. Because I didn't have a job. I wasn't going to school. I was just being out here being a bum.
And that's different now?
Yeah. I got stuff in my mind to do. I got a kid, I got a job, I'm trying to go back to school. And I got things in my head now, positive things.
A damning report from the Illinois Juvenile Justice Commission calls the state's youth prison system an expensive failure. Its study showed more than half of the young offenders detained returned to the system within 3 years of their release. George Timberlake, a retired Illinois judge and the commission's chairman, says the group observed more than 250 prisoner review board hearings and analyzed the files of about 400 young people whose parole was revoked. He says many of the juveniles who ended up back in custody didn't commit new crimes, but instead were found guilty of technical violations of a parole order, such as skipping school and staying out late.
How many teenagers do you know who are where they're supposed to be when they're supposed to be there? You know, that certainly they need to be educated that time matters and it affects other people's schedules. But that doesn't mean they ought to be back in prison because of it.
Hello, gentlemen.
There are 7 operating juvenile correctional facilities in Illinois. And on this day, I'm touring the Youth Center in Chicago with Arthur Bishop, the director of the Illinois Juvenile Justice Department. Fluorescent lights buzz overhead in the gymnasium as Bishop stops to chat with the teenagers getting ready to play basketball.
All right, good to see you again, man. You remember that conversation we had?
Remember that conversation.
All right. Okay, you going to handle your business?
14 more days, sir.
All right, 14 more days. You're back in the community, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to stay there, right?
Stay there.
All right. How you doing, man?
Bishop's been on the job for less than 2 years. He began his career as a caseworker in the state's child welfare agency. He says his team is in place to change the way kids in the system are treated. It's pretty simple. Treat kids who commit crimes more like kids and less like adults. The old model still exists, says Bishop. Parole officers who aren't necessarily trained to work with youth still handle many of the juvenile cases. But a new test model is up and running in the Chicago area.
We assigned an aftercare specialist to a youth at the front door. And so discharge planning starts at the point a youth arrives.
The aftercare specialist starts assessing whether the juvenile offender has any special needs, like mental health or educational issues that need to be addressed. Do they have any strong interest? It's all part of developing the plan for their release.
Not only does that aftercare specialist work with the youth, but they also began to engage with families. And I'm emphasizing these points because that's not historically done. Families are often put on what I call the pay no mind list, because many of the families, at least about 55%, according to our assessment, have the same, I'll use my scientific word, messed up backgrounds.
My name is Janice Griffin.
And Janice, what's your title?
I'm an aftercare specialist with the Department of Juvenile Justice.
Griffin, a clinical therapist, was one of the first aftercare specialists hired. She began working with 19-year-old Adon about a month before he was released from a juvenile facility.
July 26th of last year.
Okay, you know that date.
Yeah, I do.
Adon got into a fight. Things got out of hand. He was 16 at the time. He did about a year in a county juvenile detention facility before he was transferred to one of the state's youth centers. That's when he met Griffin.
He talked about his son the first time I met him, and he wanted to be a good role model for his son. So he understood what he needed to do. We went over parole orders, what the parole orders were, which were school, to seek employment. And he had a substance abuse assessment. He needed to go to mental health services. He's done all of those things.
Griffin says Adon has been a joy to work with, and he says she's been important to him.
I don't even see her as, doesn't feel like she's my parole officer. We get along real well. We have a good relationship.
And he says he has advice for other young people who might be hot-headed.
Stop and think. And think things through and make the best choice. Even if someone might call you a coward, but you know what you are. It doesn't matter what people say.
Is that hard to do?
No.
Was it hard to do when you were 16?
Yes.
While changing the culture of the juvenile justice system in Illinois may help lower the number of kids who end up in the state's facilities, it's a push that's necessary in part because of the state's extreme budget woes. On average, it costs a nearly whopping $90,000 to house a juvenile in the state's juvenile facilities, while community-based services cost between $4,000 and $10,000 annually. Nancy Gannon Hornberger, executive director of the Coalition for Juvenile Justice, keeps track of the reform efforts around the country and juvenile statistics. Here in the U.S., the rate of violent crime by juveniles has actually dropped. Our arrest rate is only slightly higher than that of other developed countries, but Gannon acknowledges that the custody rate for those types of juvenile offenders in the United States is 5 times higher.
There's a couple of things that explain that. One is that we really only recently have started to take stock of the developmental differences of young people and adults. And in large measure, our juvenile correction system has been modeled after adult corrections. And part of it, too, is a widespread belief that we have in the United States that we can scare young people away from committing crime. Other countries have demonstrated that incarceration is not the solution to juvenile offending, that we should take developmental differences into consideration, and that the response should fit the offense.
A lot of folks will go, you're really being soft on crime here. If these kids committed some offense, this is where they need to be, you know, not, quote, coddling them in some way.
Mm-hmm.
Is it coddling or?
You have to look at a number of different angles. So a lot of young people have unmet and undiagnosed needs in mental health, in special education. They may have experienced trauma. It's almost like, what is the right dosage? So it's a little counterintuitive. You talk about reducing reoffense and recidivism, and people think, oh, let's keep the kids in the facilities longer.
Mm-hmm.
But criminologists in their studies have shown the longer young people who offend are in corrections, the more likely they are to be criminals in adulthood.
Well,
so there's no safety benefit for that.
Yeah, I want to ask you then about some of the recommendations that were made to Illinois.
Absolutely.
And as a result of that. One of the things they did, and they did this a few years back, was they kind of decoupled the juvenile justice system from the adult corrections
yes.
system. is that common? Are more states doing that? I think some people are surprised to know that the young folks who commit crimes are supervised by the adult criminal system.
So there is a positive trend in the country to move juvenile justice services to a stronger youth development and rehabilitative model in the same sector of the state where you see children's mental health, education, and human services. And that's a very positive trend in general. There's less stigma, they get reconnected with positive supports more quickly, and if we take the dollars that we're spending on those high-priced corrections placements and we put them into comprehensive family intervention and reentry services such as education and employment skills development, their dollars better spent every time for every kid.
Nancy Gannon Hornberger. She's the executive director of the Coalition for Juvenile Justice. And a last note about the juvenile justice reform efforts in Illinois. The Illinois Juvenile Justice Commission just awarded more than $1 million to two groups who will work with kids who served their time for their crime, but who are returning to areas which have the highest rates of youth incarceration in the state.